Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to the Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we're going to be talking about women's liberation, an organization called Women's Liberation Front, or WLF, and the WLF Fest that the organization is planning for September, which I will have a workshop on peace and the anti-war movement. So my guests this week are Sarah Jones. Sarah has been an active supporter of the radical feminist movement for the past year and a half. She currently serves on the board of directors for the Women's Liberation Front and is an organizer for WLF Fest. And my other guest is Rhoda Mueller. Rhoda has been an activist for the last 15 years. She became involved in anti-war activism prior to the Iraq War and has been dedicating her life to activism ever since. She became involved in radical feminism about 3 years ago and is passionate about working towards and inspiring other women to work towards women's complete and total liberation from male supremacy. With her background in music festival and women's rights organizing, she is now a member of Women's Liberation Front and gratefully serving as a core organizer for WLF Festival 2016. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Sarah Jones and Rhoda Mueller.
Rhoda Mueller and Sarah Jones, welcome to the Soapbox.
Thank you.
Hey, Cindy, thanks for having us.
So, this is a topic that my listeners are familiar with because I've had a few shows about this, but it's not one that I really super duper focus on most of the time. But I'm very interested in getting into this and talking about the Women's Liberation Front and the WLF Fest that's coming up in California here pretty quickly. But before we get into that, Rhoda and Sarah, tell my listeners a little bit about yourselves. What brought you to radical feminism and the Women's Liberation Front? So we'll start with Sarah Jones.
Hi. I currently have been an active supporter of radical feminism for just about the past year and a half. I have since gotten involved with the organization Women's Liberation Front. It's a membership organization. I'm serving on the board of directors. And a few of us in WLF Liberation have developed a concocted WLF Fest, which is our first radical feminist festival for women that we are organizing. And I'm living in Crescent City right now, Crescent City, California, where WLF Fest is going to be held, and just kind of figuring out my place in activism, which is mostly any kind of odd jobs that need to be done, cooking, organizing, web design, various things that I found that I can contribute.
Okay, great. And I'm very excited to go to Crescent City, particularly because I've lived in California my entire life, and that's like one place I've never been to. This is not really that far from where I live right now, but so great. Rhoda Mueller, tell us a little bit about yourself and what brings you to radical feminism and the Women's Liberation Front.
Well, I think my trip to radical feminism was kind of a long one. I started in activism right before the Iraq War, and, you know, participated in marches and rallies. And for quite a few years, I was primarily an anti-war activist and followed you, Cindy, and all of your work. And then I got involved in Occupy Seattle here in Seattle.
Right.
And kind of stopped going to that, actually, when it kind of devolved into a lot of, you know, men yelling at each other all the time.
Right.
And I just kind of, you know, wasn't interested in that, so I stopped participating. but out of that, I met a lot of great women activists, and then I became involved in the Stop the War on Women rallies that happened in April of 2012. We had 56 rallies and marches in 56 cities across the country, and I was a national director for that, so I helped organize all of the things happening all over the country, and that was really exciting. After that, I and another friend started a women's activist group here in Seattle, and we were concentrating more on training, activist training, and we held a weekend-long direct action workshop for women only, and it was just incredible to be in that space of just women, and we all talked about how the feeling and just everything about it was so much different as to when we had men with us. And then being on Facebook and connecting with feminists there, I started to learn about radical feminism, and the more I learned, the more I knew that, you know, that to me, that was the way to go if we're going to really get to the root, which is what radical means, of patriarchy and bring about women's liberation, that's what we need to do. So I've been involved with radical feminism for about 3 years now. And I was just, you know, in a Facebook group, and Sarah posted that they needed people to help organizing this festival, and I also have experience organizing music festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So I volunteered for that, and that's how I became involved with Women's Liberation Front and Wolf Fest. And as far as Wolf Fest goes, like Sarah, I'm just trying to, you know, help out wherever I can to make it happen, and just so excited about it.
Well, can either one of you, like, give us a brief definition of what's the difference between being a feminist and being a radical feminist?
Yeah, so I guess the word feminist has all kinds of meaning, and usually when we're talking about liberal feminism versus radical feminism.
Right.
When we talk about the differences. And one nice thing about the organization WOLF, Women's Liberation Front, we are a group of all kinds of women who have all different kinds of approaches to a feminist movement. So some of them are more interested in the legal side, the lobbying. Some are more interested in grassroots. Some are more interested in, you know, fostering women-only space. Some are more interested in, some are interested in working with men, some are not. But we all share some common principles. And we at WOLF separate those into four task forces, which sort of are a good way to define radical feminist principles. So our task forces are protecting, the first one is protecting women's reproductive autonomy. So that's defending women's bodily sovereignty. We are talking about pro-choice legislation, promoting visibility of midwives, encouraging women's self-care for our bodies. The second one is the Pornstitution Task Force, working to abolish prostitution and pornography as forms of violence against women. Lobbying for the Nordic model, legislation to hold johns and pimps accountable. And gender abolition is the third one, abolishing the gender caste system that sees men as dominant, women as submissive, defending women-only spaces, saying that women as an oppressed class have the right to gather in groups apart from men or males or people with penises. And the last one is the Male Violence Task Force, which really, a lot of these sort of encompass each other. So the male violence, just generally seeking to combat the global epidemic of male violence against women in particular, and organizing resistance to rape culture.
Okay, great. That brought up something to me while you were speaking. Recently, the Senate, the U.S. Senate, passed a bill that said that, you know, women had to register for the draft now. And to me, personally, you know, I don't feel like that's equality. I put on my Facebook wall that I think it'll be equality when men don't have to register for the draft and be involved in, you know, this male pattern violence. So, Rhoda, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, I too don't believe that, you know, having women register for the draft is any kind of equality. For reasons of, you know, what I put on my Facebook wall was, you know, we don't have the Equal Rights Amendment passed for women
right.
in this country. In so many states, women don't have bodily autonomy. The violence against women in this country is huge, and we most often don't get the justice that we need in the court system for rape and domestic violence, even murder against women.
Right, it's staggering, yeah.
And I feel like, you know, until we have all of those things, I mean, I wouldn't want anyone in the draft in the first place. I mean, I'm ready for no military industrial complex, but while we have it, until we have those things, I don't believe that there should be any way that women are required to do that. I just feel it's incredibly wrong, and I don't feel like it's a win at all for feminism or women. That's happening.
Right. I felt the same way when Don't Ask, Don't Tell was repealed. You know, it's not a victory for these oppressed. See, look at me. I can't think of this word for these oppressed populations to be able to openly be involved in the empire, in the worst, you know, institution on earth for violence. And not only do in civil society, women, violence against women is, you know, very hard to get. First of all, that it just occurs. Secondly, that it's very hard to get justice for. In the military, it's even worse. Sexual assaults, rape, sexual harassment, and then the women who try to, especially if it was a superior, who try to get justice for that, I've heard of instances where they've been actually murdered instead of getting justice.
Yes, I've heard of those too. And that kind of makes me think about your previous question about the difference between liberal and radical feminism. And liberal feminism wants equality with men, while radical feminism wants liberation from men and their supremacy and the military-industrial complex and imperialism, everything that goes along with that. So instead of, you know, going, yay, we get to be, you know, register for selective service, we would say, you know, radical feminists say, no, you know, we don't want any part of that male-created institution.
Well, just like some men refuse to register for the draft based on principles, and that's also radical. But let's get away from the draft and let's talk about Wolf Fest. I am going to be presenting a workshop there, and I'm just new to radical feminism and all of these ideas, but I was just very pleased that I was invited to do a workshop on war and how it affects women and families, and also the disappearance of the anti-war movement here in the United States. And I think it is based on liberal principles. You know, war to these liberals are, I don't know if I can say it's okay, but they justify it if there's a Democrat in power as humanitarian intervention. But, you know, if it were John McCain or Mitt Romney in office, there would be, I believe there'd be mass action against the same things that Obama is doing. So it's not, you know, your Wolf Fest is opening up to all of these kinds of radical ideas.
Yeah.
Sarah or Roe?
Yeah. Sarah?
Oh. Yeah, I think in neoliberalism, whether we're talking about liberal feminism or, you know, the kind of liberalism that you more often critique in terms of war, I would say whether it's in relation to radical feminism or a radical analysis of the anti-war movement, who is dictating the agenda really will change a lot of liberal, neoliberal perspectives. Currently in the women's liberation movement, we have opponents who are attempting to speak on behalf of women and on behalf of feminists, and they are saying they're promoting the same kind of agenda that patriarchy upholds and the same kind of agenda that men's rights activists uphold. They're promoting kinds of ideology that the same kind of ideology that gives men access, full access to women's bodies, full access to women's spaces, allows them to dictate how women act, and a radical analysis rejects that and says that feminism is not just whatever anyone says it is. It is liberation from male supremacy. And if your ideology sounds exactly the same and would be unchallenged by the patriarchs in power, which are the men of the world,
right,
then what are we liberating women from?
Right, exactly. Then this brings me to something that I think we need to address. When I announced that I was doing this workshop, I got mostly people who were, you know, happy about it, excited about it. But then the predictable slanders started happening, excuse me, of a wolf being transphobic, and Wolf Fest being trans exclusionary. And Rhoda, maybe you can address why it's important. First of all, is a wolf transphobic? And why it's important to have women's only spaces?
No, Wolf and Wolf Fest are definitely not transphobic. We believe in human rights for every person. We don't pick and choose, you know, who should have human rights and who shouldn't. We feel that women's spaces are important because it gives the chance for women to gather, and I think of it as being free for those few days, being free from, you know, the things that we do to, you know, scare quotes, perform for men, for the patriarchy, being able to just commune with each other and not worry about our safety, have open conversations. I think about, you know, like in the late 60s and early 70s, the consciousness raising groups that happened in the feminist movement then, and how they were able to find out so much, you know, about how each experience, each individual experience was connected to each other, and how, you know, all the women were experiencing so many of the same things under patriarchy, and providing a woman's space gives us that opportunity to do that now. And I find, at least for myself, that is so helpful to me in every part of my life, to know that I'm not doing this alone, and that we're all in this together. And the more we have the opportunity to just be together and talk and do these great workshops and, you know, dance party and campfires, you know, that the closer we're going to get to hopefully finding, you know, a way to get out from underneath patriarchy.
And what would getting out from under patriarchy look like for women and girls, for my granddaughters?
Oh, that is such a huge question. I think that's really hard to answer because that's never happened.
Right.
But I imagine that the world would be an incredibly different place if there were no patriarchy. I talk a lot about having balance. And, you know, I also say things like, you know, men shouldn't be in charge anymore. Let women give it a try, at least, see what the difference would be. But I also, you know, on the more, I can't think of the word, but anyway, I also say, hey, what about just a 50-50 balance, you know, of men and women, so that, you know, I don't know, I think being out from under patriarchy would mean no more violence against women, you know, which to me is the root of, you know, everything. I mean, when we talk about reproductive sovereignty, to me, it's a heinous, violent act to force a woman to carry and raise a child that she's not ready to raise, right. You know, and when it comes to rape and all of those things. So I think most importantly, it would look like no violence against women.
Well, and we, you know, have already patriarchal institutions in place here in the world. And I just want to talk about the United States because that's where we live. But it's like, you know, even if we get a woman president in 2017, I think this is a woman that's deeply devoted to the patriarchy.
I agree with that. And I think that part of the reason for that is because the only way to get to that point is to play their game. And yeah, I mean, it makes me really sad because I personally don't vote for anyone in either of the major two parties. And I think there's other women that are running for president that aren't so devoted to the patriarchy that would do a much better job, you know?
Right, like Jill Stein of the Green Party, or here in California, we have Gloria Larriva of the Party for Socialism and Liberation. And but like you said, to get to the point where Hillary Clinton is, you can't buck the system. You have to be absorbed by and devoted to the system.
Exactly.
And I think that what you just said, that final sentence about being absorbed by and devoted to the system, of course, that's incredibly magnified the length at which you have to go if you want to be a presidential nominee in this male supremacist society. But it's really true of every woman, regardless of how much you're able to reject what's expected of women, you still live your life being kind of aware of how men see you, aware of your place. And, you know, for some women, separatism, you know, just having a community of women is an end goal. And I think that's admirable and respectable. I think any member of an oppressed class, their efforts to exclude their oppressors from their lives is respectable in any sense, whether they want to have a weekend festival or whether it's just how they want to live their lives. But even if you're a woman or desire to live without men in your life, there's something extremely valuable to be found in women's space. When it's intentionally women only, especially, we get this opportunity to ourselves and to see other women without the oppressive filter of the male gaze. You know, even if you're a non-conforming woman, you still walk around and, you know, men like to make it known what they think of you and how, you know, it's not just the superficial women who care about looking good for men. It's a conscious choice for every woman how to behave so as to be treated the way that you need to be treated to get, you know, for survival in your life. And a women-only space is this and goal. It's really fundamental to building a culture of resistance against male supremacy. It their behaviors among women is pretty innocuous in a male-dominated society that would seem completely out of place in a community of women, because we're not compensating for violence, the egos, the violence, the needs of men and those socialized males.
Thank you. It's like nobody blinks an eye if men want to have like their own little gatherings and stuff like that. But if women want to have women's only spaces, it just becomes a big, you know, controversy, and everybody is so hurt, you know, by men and women alike are hurt by wanting to have women's only spaces. And it's just the place where our culture is right now. And to me, it's just like ridiculous that it's, why do you even care if we want to gather and, you know, have a festival? What are we bothering you? Yes, like apparently we are.
Yeah. Yeah. In a culture that's built around men's access to women, there is a lot of, men equating women's boundaries with violence against them, whereas men commit the crime against women. You know, if you look at statistics, you should be able to understand why a woman would want space away from their oppressors and the tools of their oppression, you know, away from penises. So many women that I know, most women that I know, have been sexually abused, physically abused by men. So it would stand to reason that they deserve a space away. And men, and especially, we really need to fight for these women's spaces, because it's ingrained into us to include men and to make space for them and to make them comfortable. And in a women-only space, you really see the degree to which you've been compensating, you know, making sure that you're safe, making sure your children are safe, making sure the men aren't upset, that they, you know, feel good, feel valuable, and allowing them to take over, to speak over women, to, you know, taking what they say extra seriously to cater to their egos. I mean, it's just things we all do naturally. And so we really need to fight for our right to set those boundaries. And men are going to be upset. They really see just the act of having, you know, women, 50% of the population, having a space for themselves as an act of violence. And that's just something that we need to fight extra hard against.
I think this will be like my last question, and then we can wrap up if there's anything else that you'd like to add with, you know, the website and things like this. Rhoda, you've been involved in movements since before the Iraq War, and I'm involved in movements, and mostly like I imagine, especially in Seattle, but in San Francisco, where I live near Sacramento, it's like there's a lot of, I would say, left-wing liberals. They're not radical. They're not revolutionary. They have some good idea. You know, they have good principles usually on most things. And so I work with them. But I see in these movements hypersensitivity to people of color. And I'm not saying these things are bad. Hypersensitivity to people of color, to indigenous people in the movements, to trans people or LGBT community. There's like hypersensitivity on language, on inclusion. But you know, you talked about in Occupy Seattle, where it just became men yelling at each other. You know, in Sacramento, we had a situation where a man physically threatened a woman, and they're both like leaders of the anti-police violence movement. And you should have seen the rift caused by that in that community, where most of the people in that community stuck up for the man.
Yeah, that we had some issues with male violence against women in the camp in Occupy Seattle. And it also caused a huge rift with, you know, with so many people sticking up for the man. We even had, you know, a case where a woman was being stalked and threatened on the daily by a group of men that came, you know, from Occupy Seattle. And she had to move out of Seattle into an outlying city to get away from them.
Wow. Well, there's hypersensitivity to all these oppressed communities except women.
Exactly. And so, and this is something I just totally don't understand, you know? We're half the population, and we're oppressed and raped and killed and abused, and nobody seems to care, you know, what, you know, and I wonder, I mean, I do everything I can to get people to care and help us make change surrounding this, but it's incredibly frustrating that women's rights always seem to be pushed to the back burner, and that I feel that the women's liberation movement is the only movement that people seem to require us to give as much attention to every other movement. Like, people don't ask an environmentalist, like, well, what are you doing for women's rights today?
Right.
But people will ask a, you know, women's rights activist, what are you doing for environmentalism today? It's like, they expect women, as always, and this is just how it is under patriarchy, to, you know, take care of everything. And I think we need to get away from that and focus on taking care of ourselves and our right to liberation.
Perfect. Is there anything else either one of you would like to add before we talk about how people can get more information about Wolf Fest, how women can get more information about Wolf Fest?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, Sarah, what is there a website?
Yes, there's a very beautifully designed website that I put together.
Hi, Sarah.
You can find us at wolffestival.org, wolffestival.org. And there you can get all of our FAQ info on the fest, some information on some of our presenters, including Cindy, tickets. You can purchase tickets and register. We have some beautiful, beautiful limited edition posters right now you can purchase. And if you want more information about the organization WOLF, Women's Liberation Front, you can check us out and possibly join at womensliberationfront.org.
Great. I'm really looking forward to meeting both of you in person. And thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Soapbox this week.
Thanks so much for having us, Cindy.
Thank you for having us. Can't wait to meet you, Cindy.
Have a great weekend, and we'll see you soon.
So excited for your workshop.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. That's the Soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you are informed and inspired, and I hope you check more into Women's Liberation and the organization Women's Liberation Front. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, and I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to the Soapbox. Peace out for now.